Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Dr. Deborah.
Sorry, I was a little late on the...
So you're yawning over there. Are you sleep deprived?
You know what? It's so funny. I've been hiking so much. I hiked yesterday, and I hiked today, and I think it's just getting to me.
Well, so did I. You don't see me yawning, and I'm much older than you. Do you know what that means, really? You need oxygen.
Oh.
Take some deep breaths.
I'll do that. But you also don't have two little crazy ones running around.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like, crazy cats.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. So how are things going?
Good. I mean, had an interesting weekend. You know, sometimes things come up that are unexpected, and I had to sort of like calm myself down. Had just had an interesting event with someone that just was not pleasant. So, but then took a wonderful day at the beach on Sunday and went, you know, really long walk. Oh. Did my like 18,000 steps that day. Yeah, I know, crazy.
Which
and kayaking.
Oh, that's great.
There's several of them. You know where the Ventura Harbor and there's Channel Islands Harbor.
Yeah.
So the Ventura Harbor, if you go back behind the harbor, there's a long beach there.
Yes.
It's really nice. And if you go low tide, it's flat enough because I don't like walking on the slant.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, it hurts my back. So that was really nice. And then we did an hour of kayaking and it was so crystal clear and smooth. So that was really nice. And
then
we had a wonderful meal. We just found this cute little place that was up against the beach in Ventura that was something like, I don't even remember, it was a social bar or something like that, but it had a happy hour with lots of great appetizers and had ahi pokey and seared ahi sliders. It was just really fun. How about you?
That's cool. I didn't have that good of a weekend. Like,
how are the beasts?
Yeah, everything was okay. I mean, it was nothing, you know. Yeah, nothing too exciting. London had a play date with a friend. It was really cute, and he got ice cream.
That's how he marks.
That's exactly. So he was in heaven.
Do you like your play date? Yes, we had ice cream.
He told me everything. Goldfish. Meanwhile, the kids gluten-free and dairy-free and had a field day. So what can I do? So,
How does he do at a play? Does he get...
He's great everywhere else.
He went somewhere else, somebody else's house. Mm-hmm. Okay, then that's the answer then. Yeah. Just ship him out every weekend.
What are you doing next weekend?
I'm in.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm telling you, I think I should start a rent-a-grandma company, right? Everybody can bring their kids to me because I love them so much, and I know that they get to go home in a couple hours.
Yep.
I'll charge a fortune, however, though.
Okay, what about for me? Do I get the co-host discount?
20%.
That's it. Very cool.
I really think that would be fun, though.
I'd love it. I think that would be... I mean, I think we need that as moms, like just to, you know, those moments, you know? So...
For sure.
I'm down.
All right.
So cool. Let's talk about last week's guest. We had Yvonne Talley, Breaking Up the Busy. This was great. Wasn't that who we had last week?
Yeah.
Me
I'm just mesmerized by your beauty.
Stop. I love you. You're so cute. No, I'm a mess. I look like, you know, exhausted today. But yeah, so this is perfect segue because she talks about overscheduling with women and just how we're always overscheduled and just kind of different ways to really, you know, be mindful and present. And
did you change your schedule at all last week? No.
No. You?
No.
No. Exactly. I think it's hard.
I did try, actually. I mean, every time we have a show, I am mindful for at least 3 minutes of some of that stuff that I want to incorporate. And then slowly but surely, though, sometimes that doesn't happen right away.
Yeah.
But, you know, you'll have like a moment in time, like that guy who said, you know, really pay attention to turning your phone off. Do not deal with your phone. Because even though you think you're paying attention, like when you look at your phone when you're at a traffic light and then you're accelerating, you're still not back to being in that car and being present. And, you know, I've noticed a couple of times when I have, you know, out of habit, grab my phone to look at a text or something and then see that, oh, I missed that person who was about to run a red light. So I'm valuing my life more now.
That's huge.
As a result of that. And I'm not texting or on my phone when I cross the street.
Oh, that's good.
Because it's dangerous.
Extremely dangerous.
Yes.
I'm totally guilty of that, too.
I know. Most of us are.
Yes.
I swear, I did tell you I saw a cop in his car the other time.
he
and he's literally on his phone. He's, like, so distracted. I'm like, pull over.
Yeah, exactly. Tell him who's boss.
That's right. That's right. Today, though, and it's such good timing, too, because I had a little issue with Prowler, so she's going to help us. We have the most exciting guest here today. Okay. Listening to the call of her heart from an early age, Dr. Liz Fernandez chose to pursue a life's work based on what she loved. From as early as age 6, she was passionate about animals and medicine. By age 8, she was clear that she would be a veterinarian. After graduating from veterinary school in 1982, she worked in emergency medicine for many years. This experience and the loss of both parents within a few years of graduating formed a foundation for seeing an abundance of end-of-life scenarios and the ensuing emotional challenges. She's the author of Sacred Gifts of a Short Life. Welcome, Dr. Liz.
Thank you.
So happy to have you here. Yeah. So the little backstory with Dr. Liz is, as many of you have heard our show before, know that I have a cat named Prowler and also his brother Bob. And Prowler was diagnosed with stomach cancer about 7 months ago. And so Chris and I were just like, besides ourselves, we just could not handle that news. And we found this oncologist and stuff. Like, we're going to do everything we can for this cat. So we did all of our research, and we found Dr. Liz, who is a holistic veterinarian, and she does house calls, a mobile vet, which is awesome. And so she's been Prowler's biggest support and pumping him up with acupuncture and all kinds of wonderful things. So thank you. Thank you for doing what you do.
You're very welcome. I love it. I absolutely love it. I transitioned out of emergency medicine in my mid-40s when I realized that it wasn't sustainable through the second half of my career. And this is just perfect. The cadence, talk about not overscheduling. You know, I get an hour with each patient and client, and it's just lovely.
Can you explain to our listeners what exactly is holistic medicine for a vet? Because I think they're wondering what that is.
Sure. So there are different types of different modalities that holistic vets will use. I'm trained in Chinese medicine, Chinese veterinary medicine. So that's acupuncture and Chinese herbs and the use of what we call Tui Na, which is the body work that they that the Chinese medicine paradigm uses. And the other part of that is food therapy. The Chinese have, you know, believe that food is medicine, and it's the best place to start. And also, in terms of humans, they use meditation and qigong and tai chi and those sorts of things. And although our my patients, the animals, don't use those things, that they meditate for sure. But you know, we can use those to keep us more balanced. There are other kinds of holistic practitioners that may use homeopathy. They may use other nutritional types of substances, but they're basically not just using, and many of us are integrative. So obviously I've been trained in Western medicine. I don't individually do that, but I work with other veterinarians that do, and I can be the person who is able to bridge all of it. So the Western vets don't know what I do, and, you know, but I do know what they do. So I can help the client with both.
Which has been really valuable in my experience with you, Dr. Liz, that we can still talk Western and you're not doing the poo-poo. No, Western, we can't do that. You know, it's nice that you can integrate both, because I think it is important to be able to have access to both.
Yes. Yeah? And I look at what I do as part of, you know, Team Prowler. So he's got his internist, and she's talking to oncologists, and if he needs someone else, you know, to work with him in, say, there was a cardiology issue or whatever, you have all of those people, and you also have me as part of that team. And and it's nice that that's beginning to become more of the paradigm instead of, you don't need anybody but me.
Right,
you
know, right.
It's just not helpful. It's not helpful.
Do most people contact you when they have a sick animal, or do a lot of people come to you as prevention?
Most of them come for the first time with an animal that's sick. So they've gotten a diagnosis from a Western, you know, in the Western paradigm, and they're looking for alternatives or additional things that they can do in addition to the Western recommendations for treatment. Frequently at that point, when they if they have a new animal at some point, then they're more interested in coming and getting an opinion from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So they start to shift a little bit. Most of them, unless they've come like new in town and they know that they're looking for a holistic vet, most of them start with somebody that's not well.
Mm-hmm. Has Moose ever had acupuncture?
Yes. Well, this is not acupuncture, but I was telling Dr. Liz before the show, I have such a crazy story. So we got Moose, you know, he's 12, so it must have been, you know, like he was a puppy. So
are you having another birthday party for him this year?
Of course. Every year I had a birthday party for him.
She does.
Yes. So anyway, so he had diarrhea that lasted, oh my God, it was at least like 5-6 weeks. And we went to the Western doctors and they gave him like what's called like Flagyl or whatever. Nothing worked. So I looked into this holistic doctor in Santa Monica and he comes over. And the first thing he says, which I'll never forget, he said, oh, wow, I can tell you two are really bonded. Like, he's like an intuitive also. So I was like, oh, yes, love this guy, because he could tell instantly. But then he had some wand, and he started to do something with the energy. I don't know what he did something. I swear to God, the next day, Moose's diarrhea was gone.
That's awesome.
And David said, I don't care if he pulled elves out of his tush. Like, as long as it worked, it worked.
Do you know what the wand is?
It might be in a CC loop.
Okay.
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
But that...
It was like, I don't know, the way the winds were moving. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
It didn't even matter. The dog was cured, I swear to God, the next day. I mean, it was like, it was miraculous. So, yeah, I'm a big proponent. Yeah.
And if anybody does have a question for Dr. Liz, you can call us at 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815, because I'm sure you all have burning questions. I want to know stuff also about the importance of nutrition, like in the human realm, all that's organic and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, there are as many types of cat foods and dog foods on the shelf as there are cereals for kids, and it can be overwhelming. Like, what do you recommend somebody who's on a low budget versus somebody who maybe can go higher end?
Well, first of all, I would say that if you're feeding your animal a healthy whole food diet, meaning the same sorts of things that are not good for us, processed foods, you know, a lot of artificial sweeteners or ingredients of any sort, you know, the classic, if you can't say it, you probably shouldn't be eating it.
Yes.
So, you know, and there is a company that's local that started a few years ago. It's called Just Food for Dogs, but they also have cat recipes too. And what they do is they allow you to either buy the food that's frozen and it's all cooked real human grade quality food. I don't know that it's all organic, but at least it's starting from real food. On their website, you can go and you can find the recipes, and then you just have to buy the supplement to add to it.
Uh-huh.
So for a lot of dogs, especially dogs, it's a great answer. For cats, they still have to eat it. You know, they're much more picky about what they're going to eat and what they're not going to eat. And so even with my cat, I have her on a freeze-dried raw food and then also a canned food. And with the freeze-dried raw, I have to mix several flavors together so that she continues to eat it.
Yeah.
And there's only two flavors of one kind of brand of cat food she will eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we do, you know, because that's what works for her.
Sounds like my older son. He's like so picky.
Exactly.
Gotta, like, collaborate.
Yeah, cats can be really picky.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
And now Prowler, he's like on a four-course meal in the morning and the afternoon when he's doing well, and he literally will wait. If he doesn't want the tuna type thing anymore, he will sit there and wait and howl until I open another can of something that he might want at that moment. And if he doesn't want that, he'll sit there and howl. And he's got me trained now because he knows that I will open another can for him.
Yeah. But Bobcat's fine with, like, this. He doesn't want that.
Bobcat, we now call the muckraker, because Bobcat, if you put a little food in front of him, he doesn't know whether he really wants to eat it or not, but then he goes and intrudes on Prowler just to get Prowler out of the way.
Of course.
And he doesn't really want to eat it, and then I have to, like, separate them by the island, you know, in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's your side, and that's your side, and keep them playing musical chairs. It's funny, but, yeah, they are very finicky. So, but I think that brand that you recommended, I looked into it. It did seem awfully pricey.
Well, I was just going to say, I've noticed in Target, there's something called Fresh Pet. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's, and that's not processed, correct?
Correct. That's less processed. The one thing about Fresh Pet in general is that it seems to have a little bit more fat in it, so you just have to be careful if your animal, if your pet is sensitive to fat, or if they're already overweight, or if they start to gain weight. So there are a lot of good options out there. Dehydrated, freeze dried, some of it's cooked, some of it's raw, but the dehydrated is not doesn't have the extent of the bacteria concern as the frozen raw, which. My personal opinion is that that's still an option for a lot of animals, and they do well on it, but it's not necessarily for everybody.
Right.
Probably, unfortunately, the thing that's the most processed is dried kibble.
Yeah.
That whether that's for dogs or for cats, and it's just, it's the most, it's like feeding your animal cereal for their entire life.
Oh. Yeah.
So it's...
I'm feeling really guilty now.
No, it's okay. Well, listen, we're trained as you know, that this is what they're supposed to eat, you know, and we learn.
And some dogs have done... I mean, my first dog, that's what she got her entire life, and she lived to be 15.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's not that it's going to be horribly bad for everybody, but it's just... We can do better.
My dog eats like a prince. The guy eats better than I think my children, my husband and I. He gets like the top of the line, like Ziwi Peak, which is like this frozen, like from, I have to like import it from like Australia or wherever it's from. And he eats really well. But it's because like he is picky too, you know.
But this Fresh Pet stuff that you're talking about with the high fat, would that be recommended for a cat with cancer who's lost weight? Or would that not necessarily, would it be too harsh on their system?
I don't even know if they make it for cats.
Oh.
I know
Fresh Pet. How come they don't say...
And they might.
They might.
I'm not familiar with it. And I haven't looked at it specifically, so that's something we could talk about later if it's something that, you know, if he likes it.
And what's your view then on supplements in addition to what goes into the cat food? Are there certain things that are good for animals with certain conditions, like with kidney disease and things like that?
Sure. The supplements, you know, unfortunately, all food these days, even fresh vegetables right from your garden, because the soil is not as
rich
as it used to be, they don't have the same nutrient profile as they used to. So the idea of giving supplements can be helpful. And we're learning more and more about that every day. So if you have a young, healthy pet and they are finicky, they may not be a big fan of getting a lot of supplements. So you've got to consider that. If you've got an older pet that would eat anything and everything that you threw in front of them, then, I mean, it's like my dog. I give her the same standard process supplements that I take, partly because she's standing there watching me as I'm grabbing all these pills, and then I just give her a little bit, and I just put the pills on the floor, and she eats them all up.
Really? That's
so
amazing.
Yeah.
Why not? Right? So I give her, you know, a vitamin B supplement and a vitamin D supplement and ubiquinol. And,
oh, my God.
Wow. But how do you know the dosage for an animal?
Well, those things are out there.
Okay.
Yeah. They're out there and available. And you know, usually you can, if you go to, there are just a lot of potential sites. And usually there's not a really narrow range. And some of them are actually made for animals, so then you can just use that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know we also want to talk about the book.
Yes.
So, author of Sacred Gifts of a Short Life, we are talking with Dr. Liz Fernandez. So, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, as I transitioned out of emergency medicine and into this holistic acupuncture practice that I now have, the demographic of my patients is mostly geriatric. And so I would see them once a week or once a month or just very routinely, all of them. And so a lot of them had orthopedic issues, hip dysplasia, weak backs, elbow issues, you name it. And and or they had cancer or some other, you know, kidney disease or any of those things that sure. older animals get. And so I was then tasked with trying to help them make that transition and decide when it was appropriate. And so I wanted to be there for them. I knew the people and the pets, and you know, it was something that. So I just wound up seeing a lot more animals that I wound up bringing through that end of life journey, and in talking to the clients, I found that I was helping them just navigate that whole journey, and a lot of times what would started to happen is as I would say something, I could see them light up, relax, and recognize that what they were hearing felt right. And so I would say that, you know, recognize that that was something that a lot of people needed to hear. And so over time, probably over 5 or 6 years, I started to realize that maybe I needed to share this more broadly. And, you know, things would happen, and I got this little voice, and it wouldn't let me go. And so, you know, the book came through me. I was not really, you know, I had other ideas like we all do. I need to write a book. And I would get bored, and I would just like, that, I'm not going to do it. But this one just demanded to be written, and within 6 months it was written.
And is this your dog on the cover?
That is my dog. That's actually a painting of my dog that was done by a client of mine.
Oh, that's great.
And that was a gift that she had given to me, yeah.
Oh, beautiful. So, it's a beautiful cover.
And I love the wisdom pause. Each chapter has a wisdom pause. Is it okay if I read one?
Sure. Yeah.
So this is wisdom pause. Allow your heart to open as you bring into focus either an experience or something or someone you love deeply. Inquire, what does it look like for me to remain empathetic and forgiving if necessary, while simultaneously honoring my deepest truth? Inquire, even if I have no idea why someone feels a certain way or is acting or wanting to act in a way that seems unfathomable to me, can I leave space in my heart that there is something I do not know or understand that would make their position understandable? This does not mean you feel it is justifiable or that you agree. You know, that's probably an important one for me to have read today.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome.
That's really very beautiful. So, I love this. And can you help us? I mean, grieving for the loss of a pet is so similar to grieving for the loss of a loved one, right?
Yeah.
You know, and historically they talk about stages of grieving and such like that. What's your idea of what does it look like when somebody's grieving? What can somebody expect to experience during that time?
Well, the way I look at grief in general is it is simply, it's there because we love. We grieve because we love. And if we simply open to that, it's a roller coaster. You know, as we've all experienced, you know, I mean, I've been in funerals where all of a sudden everybody bursts out laughing.
Yeah.
I've been at, you know, there's weddings where everyone's
people's crying.
So all of those emotions are coming together. You know, you're crying and you're laughing at the same time. And that's actually a deeper truth of what it is to be human. We can hold those what seem to be in our mind diametrically opposed emotions at the same time when we're coming from our heart. Our heart knows how to do that. And so grief is just allowing space for all of it and not judging what I should be feeling or what someone else thinks I should be feeling. I know a lot of my clients will say, I've heard people say, you should just get over it. It's just a dog.
That's like cutting you in the heart.
And it's, because it's just love is what, that's what it is.
Right.
And it doesn't matter whether that love is a turtle or, you know, your mother.
Right.
It's, it's still, it comes from that deepest essence of all of us. And so how we respond to a change in in how we can relate to that person or animal or whatever, mm-hmm. that loved one, because they're no longer in form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's jolting. Mm-hmm. And so we have to give ourselves time and space to honor that and just go with the flow. Yes, mm-hmm. you're not the same. Mm-hmm. When you lose a loved one, you're never the same. But hopefully your heart has broken open and you're capable of even more love and mm-hmm. and more, you're just more open.
Mm-hmm. And that's beautiful.
It is really beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about when my older son just recently lost a hamster. And he was
devastated.
So upset.
Yeah.
And, well, what happened was the hamster wasn't doing well. We took it to the vet. There was a couple vets that did hamsters and
exotic vets. Mm-hmm. You have to find an exotic vet.
Exactly.
I remember when I had Bun-Bun, the bunny.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And so, he ended up not making it. And it was, interesting to watch a child's process of grief, too. And then I go back and I'm like, oh, my God, why? It was, such a, Jewish mom's reaction. I had to tell him because the doctor had called. And then I was like, oh, do you want to get something to eat? It was I don't know. I think I was so uncomfortable because he was upset. And it was everybody's experiencing so much. It's mm-hmm. so hard. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had to put an animal down?
No.
Oh.
But I think we should talk about that because it's super interesting what you had said in your book. And I wanted to read this part. It's really interesting. It's about, whether or not you should put the dog or pet down. And it says, it's common for people to feel the doctor can make the best decision. Many feel afraid that they don't have all the facts, that are not thinking clearly and don't want to make the wrong decision. Many don't trust that they can tell if their loved one is suffering. Some don't want the responsibility for making the decision. The sense of guilt can feel overwhelming, mm-hmm. and so they defer to the expert. However, this is a very personal decision, and there's no right or wrong. It will always be a case of it depends. This means that all factors must be considered. And so that is super interesting because that's something that I would absolutely be like, well, what do you think? Because you don't want that on you.
Mm. Right.
So, can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. So the first, it's very interesting that you ask what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I can give you, I can give you some parameters about, what's going on medically. Most importantly, it's how do you feel?
Mm-hmm.
Does this feel right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that I can't answer for you.
Mm-hmm.
Just last night, mm-hmm. I was with a family whose dog has a very serious... I wasn't sure he was going to make it through the night.
Mm-hmm.
But he was comfortable. And so they chose just to...
Mm-hmm.
see what would happen. And he's better this morning. He's not going to recover. He's
right.
going to, succumb. He's got cancer. And it may be today. It may be next week. It may be next month. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But their decision was, since he's comfortable, we're going to see what happens.
Yeah.
And, the dying process, just like the birthing process, involves discomfort, at some level. And so it's really challenging to know whether that's suffering or how much one might be suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no right or wrong. If you're like, this is all good, I'm ready, they're ready, let's just not move through this anymore, that's perfectly the right answer for you at
right.
that moment. If in another situation you're like, let's just be here and be present. And if you can do that in a loving way, just like we do with most of our human loved ones, we just stay there and be with them and comfort them. And in time, the body will stop breathing, the heart stops, and the person will pass on. And sometimes that requires some agonal breathing or some other things that might not look really comfortable.
Yeah.
But we honestly we don't necessarily know just how uncomfortable that is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a part of the process.
Right.
So if we can just kind of find a way to make space for it without creating the stories that really create a lot of angst for us, that I think is helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we as a society aren't good at that.
No.
We've separated ourselves out so much from death. It's really,
yes.
It's because it becomes a bigger and bigger boogeyman.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't know how to engage it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to talk about, you know, dancing with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's what I call formless love. Mm-hmm. You know, once someone is no longer in form, the love is still there. It's just they're formless.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's a beauty there. There's a peace there. And so it's not just this evil, bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can, mm-hmm. you know, kind of engage it.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as kids, one of the things I think is really important, especially with little kids,
mm-hmm.
is they're curious. And a lot of times they want to be present.
Mm-hmm.
If they do, it's okay. It's especially important, I think, though, whether they're present or not, is that they can see the animal after they're done.
Mm.
They've died.
Okay.
Because
that's good to know.
Because
mm-hmm.
they don't have much abstract thought.
Yeah.
Before or six or seven or so.
Mm-hmm.
And so to say death, they don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
if they see it,
mm-hmm.
if they see the stillness and how mm-hmm. they're that the animation of that being is now not
mm-hmm.
there,
mm-hmm.
Then they understand. And the more you can talk to them about it, the more you can also help them with that egocentricity that they have as far as thinking that they did something wrong to make it happen.
Mm.
Very common with kids that mm-hmm. they don't, they just think because
yeah.
it's, you know, they have that egocentric
sure.
perspective that mm. I must have done something
mm-hmm.
wrong. And the less they understand, the less that you've kind of tried to
mm-hmm.
engage them and help them to understand that this is just a normal process, and they see everybody else that they're so unhappy,
mm-hmm.
and they're also they just get that energetic of just
yeah.
grief that just
yes.
overwhelms them.
Sure.
They don't know what to do with it, so
sure.
they start telling stories that they must have done something wrong mm-hmm. to make everybody so upset.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so we can do a lot to help them
sure.
not have that.
I would also imagine that the grieving process is different depending on whether it's complicated by certain beliefs or pressures in society. For instance, I had a cat a long time ago, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and Mr. Hyde passed at 21. He just kept on going,
wow.
and he didn't have illness. He just went to sleep and wasn't there. His brother had passed at 18, and I didn't actually have to make the decision, but I was at the place that I needed to make it if he hadn't gone, because he had a stroke, and then he stopped eating. And I remember feeling, and, you know, I was barely, you know, in college. I had no money. I remember spending every last dollar I had at the mm-hmm. vet for tests. And a lot of that was, I mean, I'm glad that I did it, but I want people to know that that's not always what we have to do for our animal. He was very, very, very sick. His chances, but I would have felt too guilty because people would say,
right.
you wouldn't do everything for your animal. Okay, I'll do everything, but I also need to eat, and I need, you know, and so I think people can have a lot of guilt around that stuff. And to be honest, I think I kept him around 2 weeks longer than he really needed to be there
mm-hmm.
just because I couldn't let go and I didn't want to be that person who hadn't done
everything. Yeah.
You know, now when I look back, I have had to make the decision twice to put mm-hmm. my little bunny down
yeah.
who had some brain tumor thing that caused him to spin,
mm-hmm.
you know, spin in his cage over and over again, which I hand fed him and got him well for a year, and then it came back, and
yeah.
it was like, you know, so that, and then a cat that I had adopted named Baxter, and he was only 14, but it was just, he just was so miserable. He couldn't move his back
yeah.
legs, he couldn't
mm-hmm.
get around, he couldn't make it to the litter box, and so it was hard, but I felt good about those, because I think I had matured, and I had come to understand that
yeah.
this was for the animal, and not for me so much.
Right. So as we move through life and we have opportunities to face this sort of a situation, what we do in one, we may often find that we would not do that again,
mm-hmm.
whether that's doing everything or doing very little.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it comes back to just being present and honoring where you are in that moment. And I think that the most important thing is, especially if you feel that for whatever reason you have a sense of guilt about mm-hmm. whatever it is you did or didn't do, mm-hmm. that you can kind of in retrospect, and I've done this, and I described mm-hmm. a couple of situations in my book where, you know, I did have that sense, and really what is the way to heal guilt is through forgiveness mm-hmm. and self-forgiveness,
sure.
you know, and recognizing that now that I know better, I can do better, mm-hmm. and so whatever that looks like, mm-hmm. you know, and so we have an opportunity to be gentle with ourselves, too, mm-hmm. and be understand that the decisions that we made were from where we were, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and I see that in my practice, and again, you know, I may not agree completely with a decision that someone makes, mm-hmm. or I wouldn't necessarily even mm-hmm. do it in my own situation given the same circumstance. However, I can honor that, mm-hmm. whatever that decision is for someone else, mm-hmm. and see that, yes, in this situation, this is what they needed to do. So when you were younger, you had to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about that I also think is the animals, our pets, they know that. And mm-hmm. and it's like, okay. Even with my cat, I told him once, I said, look, you know, I said, I need to do this one more thing, mm-hmm. this one more test, just to be sure. Mm-hmm. And after that, mm-hmm. if we don't come up with a clear way of helping you,
mm-hmm. right.
I'm okay. Mm-hmm. And I'll let you go. And he was just kind of like, okay, I guess that's what we're going to do. And so, you know, they don't even have to have forgiveness. They just trust that we are coming from a loving space.
Yeah.
And I think that's how we get to that self-forgiveness, is trust that we were coming from a loving space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're so wise. You have so much wisdom, really.
Yeah,
I mean, this
beautiful.
Is so helpful. I guess coming from the other end, what would you recommend for people who don't understand our connection with pets? Or, yeah, I mean, I can imagine, you know, you gave an example of like, oh, it was just a pet. Or I think the automatic, thing is, oh, well, you can just get another one. And, yeah, I'm curious.
That's a great question, too.
Yeah.
When is the timing of your – I have a sense I know how you're going to answer this, but I'd uh-huh. like to hear that
well,
as well. Yeah.
That part is – it depends. As far as addressing those that don't mm-hmm. have that connection or have never had that connection. I know a lot of people get frustrated or angry. I just have a lot of compassion because they've missed something that, you know, they don't understand because they've never experienced it.
Yep.
And they may not, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone has a different experience and
sure.
life experience and path to mm-hmm. journey through. I do think, though, that they, if I know them well enough, I can usually find what it is that resonates with them in a similar way.
Mm.
You know what
That's
I mean?
That's a great point. Yeah. So it's like, right, it's like, oh, well, it's like, you know, losing your car, if somebody's car is like, or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and that I think that they can start to relate to,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if they're just, they don't mean to be judgmental, I think it's just a matter of, they just don't,
they
have
it.
No reference point for mm-hmm. What we're sensing.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't relate to not loving animals.
I totally get that.
Yeah, although I mean, I don't judge people who, some people just don't have that mm-hmm. that bond. It's like my mother was excellent, amazing with animals and terrible with people.
Really?
Yeah, just like that's where I knew that she really had a loving heart because I could see it, but she didn't mm-hmm. feel safe to be that way with people. You know, she'd been too badly wounded. You know, I've met a lot of people like that
uh-huh.
they're amazing with their animals. Like you meet them as people and you go, I would never trust you with an animal, but then you see them completely come to life and be so gentle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Do you ever probe into people's stories about that?
I don't usually need to probe. They usually, over time, given that, you know, I'm there for about
right.
an hour,
mm-hmm.
and where I get to learn a lot about my
sure.
clients, just because they do trust me, and they are willing to share their right. experiences. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
It's interesting. Oh boy, yeah. Okay, we have more questions for sure.
I want to hear your answer. You said it depends on when.
Oh yeah, when do you get for a child? For say, when if a child like the hamster, did he want to replace the hamster
immediately? Mm. So instead of one more, we got two more. So now we have three total. Yes, but yeah, I mean, but in general, yeah. Like, is there sort of a rule of thumb with replacing pets?
No.
Right.
No, there's not a rule mm-hmm. of thumb. If there is a rule, it's whenever it feels right.
Right.
And, you know, kudos to you for honoring your son's, mm-hmm. you know, sense and that need that he mm-hmm. had, regardless of whether you thought it was wise or not. So long as he, you know, so long as he's responsible for his little...
Furries?
Yeah, furries.
Sort of.
Yeah. Cleaning the cage is a pain because we had to get three separate cages.
Of course.
Because, you know, the two that we got together seemed to get along the first couple of days and then didn't.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is interesting. And then I imagine there's some people who I've heard still who say it's still too hard to get another one. It's almost mm-hmm. like the pain of losing, you know, their pet was so strong they cannot imagine going through that again.
What do you recommend to somebody who really did do it too soon for themselves? In other words, like I've encountered some people before where they lose their pet and then they go out and get another one and then all they're doing is mourning and grieving mm-hmm. and not bonding with this animal because it's not the same personality. It's right. not the same. Like they wanted a replacement and they don't have the wherewithal uh-huh. to have a new beautiful relationship with this one. Do you have any recommendations on that?
I don't know that any of us can. They have to walk that journey, whatever that looks like. Mm-hmm. And you know, perhaps they need to. If it's such that they really begin to recognize that this is not working, mm-hmm. then I think that as much as I don't necessarily promote, you know, just getting a pet and then just dumping it, mm-hmm. but if they just can't handle it, then they have to honor that, mm-hmm. and then. You know, if they can get some support and get someone to help them find a mm-hmm. a replacement home, then that would be one option. You know, mm-hmm. but it's got to come from that. You can't. Nobody can tell them, well, you shouldn't have this pet and you should get rid of it.
Sure.
You know, and on the other hand, you know, perhaps it just takes more time. And you know, I've known people that have wound up with cats because the cat just kind of. Worm their way, mm-hmm. you know, would hang around the front door, and they have a way of finding the people that hate them the most and going and hanging out uh-huh. and just saying, well, no, I'm going to be here.
Yeah.
And you're going to fall in love with me. Uh-huh. And they do.
My dad was terrified of cats, mm-hmm. and I always wanted a kitten when I was mm-hmm. growing up. And he terrified, cause I guess in the war and the Holocaust, you know, cats were crazed and they would jump out of stairwells and mm-hmm. attack people and all that stuff. So he was like, no. We had a dog. And then finally, I convinced him. I said I would take care of it and all this stuff. So we got this little rescue kitten, and this cat was like in the top of a pine tree uh-huh. at like midnight that my poor dad had to climb up to get this little bugger down. Sadly, though, this should never have happened, but we had let the cat go to another person who wanted to take care of it because mm-hmm. my dad just was not sure. cool with this, and she left rat poison or snail poison out, so that little kitty did not make it, which broke my heart. Then I finally convinced him for us to have another one, Morris, 22-pound tabby.
Yeah.
And exactly what you just said, Dr. Liz, that cat knew my dad didn't like him, and he'd always go and sit on his lap. But he eventually endeared himself to my dad because he was just like, this is it, you know?
Right.
You're going to like me, whether you like it or not. It was really amazing.
They have this infinite amount of patience.
Yeah. Yes, so to funny. Make you cross over.
You know what's interesting? My parents' dog was not, like, you know, liked me but wasn't anything, and then when I was pregnant it would not leave my side. Isn't that interesting?
Like protective almost,
I guess. It was so interesting. I was like, I should be pregnant all the time because then I get attention from Marty. Like, that was like the other interesting question I had, because we've had this conversation, my husband and I, about cloning our dog, And I'm curious if any of your patients have ever done that or thought about it. Or
is it possible?
Yeah.
I actually did have one client mm-hmm. who was planning on their dog died, and the husband mm-hmm. wanted to clone it and get it stuffed.
Oh, interesting.
And the wife was not as
mm-hmm. keen on it.
Keen on that idea. And basically, she said, you know, if it's stuffed, you're staying at your office.
Right.
So I lost touch with them.
Uh-huh.
But as far as I know, they did try.
To clone them. Oh, interesting.
It's very expensive.
Yeah.
And whether it actually works or not, you
right.
know, that, there's a question as
yeah.
to whether that, you know, the whole uh-huh. process will actually take.
Oh,
so I don't know
yeah.
whatever happened
okay.
with that. But it's pretty unusual.
So interesting. I watched this documentary. I think it was My American Life with Ira Glass, and they had a cow named Chance, and the owner cloned it, and the second one was Second Chance. And what was interesting is it wasn't totally the same. I mean, there were certain aspects, and the narrator was saying, you know, that's the hard part. It's like you're seeing this animal that looks like, you know, oh, it's Chance, but then he does something that's kind of out of character, and it's like, oh, wait, that's not really Chance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, and Chance is clone. Like, it's just
super
fascinating.
Well, even, like, identical twins, right? They end up mm-hmm. behaving differently.
Yes.
Yeah?
It's fascinating, though, that whole... And so, can you touch upon, a little bit about, you know, rituals? I imagine, exactly, some people want to stuff, some people want to bury, some people want to cremate, and... You know, the latest thing I heard, too, was making rings out of carbonite, like, with their ashes. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that?
Yeah. Rings and medallions are,
uh-huh.
you know, in...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, there, I mean, you know, if you go online and you start to look at that sort of thing, there's just, you know, a lot of different options mm-hmm. that are coming up. I mean, even for people where they, you know, you plant them... And you grow, wind up growing a tree. Or,
yes, that's interesting.
So probably the most common thing that is done mm-hmm. with animals is that they're cremated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that's the most common.
That's the most common
for
thing.
Sure, I thought burial. They're,
well, the reason for the not being burial not being that common is that in most areas in where we live in Southern California, it's not legal to bury your animal
yeah.
in your backyard.
Oh, I know
yeah,
that.
And part of the...
I better go dig up all the... No, I'm kidding.
Well, I mean, yeah. if you don't bury them deep enough, the coyotes...
Sure.
You know,
that makes sense.
The mountain lions and whatnot will,
yeah.
you know, come
sure,
and
the
help
carcass.
You out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's that.
Yeah.
So it's just easier. I mean,
uh-huh.
what do you do with this? There is the cemetery.
I was thinking that there's
yeah.
a pet cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and so some people will
uh-huh.
you know do that, and it cost wise that's more costly than having them cremated.
Oh,
and they
really?
Do cremations there too. Yeah,
interesting.
Because yeah. you're taking up space and
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So you know that's just mm. typically what
yeah.
what's done.
That's interesting.
Believe it or not, we are almost out of time. So what are the final words of wisdom that you would give our audience about end of life or anything about animals?
For me, I think what I would like to invite everyone is to, as I was saying before, kind of be willing to have a relationship with death sooner rather than later. Get to begin to understand and embrace the whole idea we're all going to die. And what does that look like for you and for your loved ones? And you know, what do you want, both for our animals and our pets and our, you know, and for ourselves mm-hmm. and for our loved
mm-hmm.
ones?
Mm-hmm.
And just be willing to, you know, make it a part of life, because it is a part of
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of pushing it away and making it this big boogeyman that's scary and so devastating.
Mm-hmm.
It is devastating, and there's something sacred that if we start to have a relationship, we get to kind of uncover and
mm-hmm.
yeah.
and really profoundly change, let that change us.
Oh, this is beautiful. Thank you, Dr. Liz Fernandez,
yeah.
the author of Sacred Gifts of a Short Life, Uncovering the Wisdom of Our Pets' End-of-Life Journeys. And where can people get the book, and where can people find you?
They can get the book on Amazon, and they can find me at Liz at LizFernandez.com. or just LizFernandezDVM.com, and that will take, that's the book website, and that will also take you to my Acupuncture for Pets website if you're local in Ventura, Santa Barbara, or West LA.
And DVM is the initials for Doctor Veterinary Medicine. But use the initials, LizFernandezDVM.com.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you.
So wonderful.
So next week we have Richard Schneider Jr.
And what was this for again?
I don't know. You put it in
there. I put that in there? Oh, yeah, I did. What is that?
Well, it'll be a surprise to all of us.
Cool.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. And make sure you go pet your furry friends and tell them how much you love them.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.